Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the topical Tuesday edition of the Devil's Advocates radio show, rolling into the happy hour. It's going to be a gut punch to your senses, people. I got Dominic. We got Fancy Brian. We got Evan lightly screening the calls at 844-967-2789. And Dom, I've got an update in the trial of Steve Bannon. So let's start there, if you don't
mind. Let's hear about the trial from hell. He was going to go medieval on their asses, wasn't he? How's that working out?
Well, Dominic, new reporting from CNN. Apparently, the trial is closed for the day. They've broken. But here is the latest. Steve Bannon, an aide to former President Donald Trump. Is that what you're calling him? I thought he's more of a coffee boy at this point. Is on trial for contempt of Congress charges for failing to comply with subpoenas from the House committee investigating the insurrection. I'd like to call them the J6 committee. So here is how it started. The prosecutor tells the jury that Bannon, and here's the quote, chose to show his contempt for Congress, congressional authority, and its processes. In her opening statement, Justice Department prosecutor Amanda Vaughn told the jury that Bannon, and again a quote, prevented the government from getting the important information it needed from him. She said Congress needed to know what the defendant knew and what the events were of January 6, 2021, while describing the subpoena as a legally enforceable order. Vaughn added, because it was a subpoena, Congress was entitled to the information it sought. It wasn't optional. It wasn't a request. It wasn't an invitation. It was freaking mandatory. By ignoring Congress's order for testimony, even after the House rejected his reasons for not cooperating, Bannon, again, here's a quote, prevented the government from getting the important information it needed from him. Vaughn said, she said the jury will see how Bannon chose to show his contempt for Congress's authority and its processes.
Crudy, the prosecutor goes on. The case is about Bannon thumbing his nose at government process.
I'd say more of a middle finger.
Prosecutor Vaughn finished up the government's opening statement. She distilled what the prosecution thinks this case is about. Quote, this case is about the defendant thumbing his nose at the orderly process of our government. Vaughn recounted the warnings Bannon received from the committee as the subpoena deadlines approached and how the committee rejected the arguments he had put forward for not cooperating. Again, another quote. This is not a case of mistake. The defendant didn't get the date wrong. He didn't get confused on where to go. He didn't get stuck on a broken down metro car. He just refused to follow the rules.
Dominic, that's not... Oh, yeah, definitely the bird. But that's not how Bannon's lawyer would describe it. Bannon tells the jury, or at least his lawyer did, he's innocent of these charges.
Totally innocent.
I mean, aren't you kind of lying before the court? You know your client is guilty, guilty, guilty. But here's how CNN's reporting it. Evan Corcoran, Bannon's lawyer, began the defense's opening statement by telling the jury that Bannon is innocent of these charges. I'm pretty sure he's innocent. He briefly outlined Bannon's biography, including his time in the Navy. That was a long time ago. You know what I'm saying?
Come on, man. Reliving the glory years. Tell me about the touchdown you scored in high school, Crudy.
That was a long time ago in both cases. His time in the Navy and his career in the media, Dom.
Is that what it is? The professional troll?
According to his counsel, he was a political thinker and a political strategist, and he helped the candidate run for the presidency successfully, I guess.
Steve Bannon.
Kocharyn said while touting Bannon as a top advisor to former President Trump. Kocharyn noted the success of Bannon's podcast. Yeah, he's a big podcaster.
Yeah.
Podcast star. And said the day before the attack at the Capitol, most shows were reporting that there might be violence at the Capitol the next day. Now, he put it a little differently, but anyways. Kocharyn then turned to the subpoena, which he noted was issued 8 months later. So what?
Get to the point, man.
An enforceable subpoena.
As he continued his opening statement, Kocharyn previewed a defense that would claim there was no ignoring the subpoena. He went through the timeline around the subpoena.
No ignoring the subpoena.
But not without a brief detour into a discussion of the role politics was playing. Quote, politics is the lifeblood of the U.S. House of Representatives, he said, while asserting that politics also affects staff members in Congress. Turning back to the subpoena, he noted the communication between the Select Committee's chief counsel, Kirsten Amerling, and Bannon's lawyer. The evidence is going to show there is direct engagement between the committee staff members and Bannon's attorney, Kocharyn said. There was no ignoring the subpoena. There will be no evidence showing that. So what, you kept dragging it along, and therefore there's no ignoring of the subpoena?
Dominic, the DOJ questions their first witness, January 6th committee staffer, about the purpose of the House panel. You know, the J6 subcommittee.
The unselect committee.
The unselect committee. Now, Prosecutor Vaughn asked the first witness, House committee staffer Kristen, with an I, Amerling, about the purpose of the House January 6th committee and how the committee functions as part of Congress. You know, in case you turned to Fox one night, it wasn't on. Anyways, after several basic questions about how Congress is set up and how it's using committees in the process to craft laws, Vaughn's questions turn to the specific objectives of the House January 6th committee itself. The committee is, this is a quote, the committee is tasked with providing the public, a complete account of what happened that day, why it happened, and it also tasked with evaluating recommendations on laws, regulations, rules, policies, that will help make sure something like that never happens again.
Well, no wonder why Bannon doesn't want to comply and hold Congress in contempt, because he's all about it happening again.
Hey, strap in, man.
That's right. Amid questions about how the J6 committee works and the mechanics of its subpoenas, the DOJ asked the House staffer Amerling to elaborate on the time crunch the committee is facing and answers two questions about when the committee launched and when it will expire. She testified that it only has about a year and a half to do its work. She said there is an urgency to the committee's work, given its focus on a violent assault on the U.S. Capitol and law enforcement. Quote, we have a limited amount of time to gather information, Amerling said, while noting that the threat to our democratic institutions continues. And it does. And Steve Bannon is rightfully charged with contempt of Congress, and he should not get away with it, nor should any of the people subpoenaed by Congress in his J6 lawful, rightful committee to find out what the hell happened and hold those people accountable and make sure it does not happen again. We still have Republicans out there that said, nah, wasn't it really a big deal? I mean, come on, Trump said that he was his protesters, his rabid coup attempts, they were what, hugging and kissing the cops? That's what Trump said. That's how many tourists. Republicans continue to believe.
It was a really positive crowd, I think U.S. Senator Ron Johnson said. You know what? A little bit additional reporting here. Bannon's lawyer threw sort of a pre-kickoff Hail Mary right at the end, Dom. Steve Bannon's lawyer continued to complain right up to the start of the opening statements that his client was left with no defenses after his legal stunts failed. The former White House strategist is on trial for contempt. We've talked about that, contempt of Congress. And the judge last week denied his request for a delay in his trial. Attorney David Schoen, that's a different attorney than the one given the statements today, fumed over pretrial rulings blocking his planned defenses, according to Wall Street Journal reporter Jan Wolf. Now, here is what Wolf tweeted out. As we near opening statement, Steve Bannon's lawyer, David Schoen, of Trump impeachment fame, you remember that guy, continues to vent about pretrial rulings. Anyways, here is the statement quoted, you know, from the courtroom. Mr. Bannon is handcuffed and can't tell jurors what he believed. Well, Let me read a little farther. Judge Carl Nichols ruled that Bannon, who has not worked in the White House since... When did Bannon leave the White House? Do you recall?
Like 8 days after he got there.
2017.
Right.
Hasn't worked there since 17. Was not protected by executive privilege. Can't extend that 3 years beyond your term in a job that you used to work
three,
at?
Three, five, and not be a sitting president? Yeah, there's a few barriers to that defense, I would say.
Come on, Dom. I used to call that hotel in Milwaukee for years using your old real estate discount. The judge also ruled he was not protected by executive privilege, and he rejected the argument that Bannon was tricked into believing he could ignore the subpoenas by the Department of Justice guidelines. But he did some deep diving on YouTube and decided he was going to blow it off.
I did some internet research. It's totally cool.
Nichols also ruled that Bannon could not present a public authority defense against because Trump was not a federal official when he was issued this subpoena. And the judge rejected his argument that prosecutors needed to prove that he knew his conduct was unlawful. I didn't know I could not do that. That's pretty much it, Dom. So the lawyer tried one more time. My understanding from other reporting is the lawyer sought a 1 month continuance right up until kickoff. And, you know, apparently the judge said play ball, drop the puck.
Yeah. A month? No. A week? No. A couple of days? Maybe? No. No, hell no. And we are still in the midst of all of this. And obviously, all these stories continue to just rain down upon us, and perhaps why that my mood is the way that it is. But the Washington Post's reporting, Secret Service cannot recover texts, no new details for the January 6th committee. I mean, we just had, as mentioned in this court case from the J6 staff member who was testifying, a violent assault on the Capitol. And what, the Secret Service decides that's the time to go and recycle everyone, all the people that were there on the 5th and the 6th, that they're going to get rid of their cell phones? And, you know, we just don't have any records. They were supposed to upload some stuff, but, you know, maybe they didn't. Unacceptable.
Steve Bannon, you are no Navy man. Dom, I've got some encouraging news on the other side. Targets of the Georgia, you know, grand jury. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Steve Bannon.
They say it's medieval. Well, so is the wheel.
I'm going to get medieval on your ass.
That creep can roll, man.
Yeah, but he's a pervert, dude.
Steve Bannon.
I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for those meddling devil's advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. If you have not liked us on the socials, check us out on the Facebooks at Devil's Advocates Radio, on Twitter at Devil Radio, and of course on the web at darnwi.com.
Dominic, I'd like to bring a story back to you, my friend. This one from a favorite source, the Raw Story. Trump's fake elector scheme to spill into public view in Georgia as the probe expands. Now, we noted in our little missive to you on social media, you fine audience members, what, the fraudulent Trump electors in Georgia, Dom, they have been notified by the Fulton County DA. They're targets now.
No longer witnesses. They are targets.
They are targets of the grand jury investigation. And there's more, Dom. The American people will reportedly learn more about the investigation into Donald Trump's fraudulent elector scheme. Ooh, I want to know. As part of his unsuccessful coup attempt after losing the 2020 election to Joe Biden. You know that part, right? The former president tried to perpetrate a coup. GOP State Senator Burt Jones, the football player. I don't think it's the same guy, because that does factor in Minnesota. Former NFL player. Turned GOP candidate, but we'll get to that. GOP State Senator Burt Jones was a fake elector in Georgia and is currently the GOP nominee for lieutenant governor in the 2022 midterms.
Uh-oh.
Jones was one of seven current office holders who took part in the effort and last week received a letter from the Fulton County District Attorney, Fannie Willis, informing him he's a target of her investigation. Hashtag Breaking news, parts of the Georgia investigation into Donald Trump and his fake elector scheme are about to spill into public view, according to Jose Paglieri of the Daily Beast. Here's a quote. One elector is trying to defy a subpoena, forcing him to testify before the grand jury. Wonder how that's going to work out for Steve Bannon. On Tuesday, the extent of the investigation also appeared to expand. Oh, I like the growing investigation, Dom. Many tendrils. The scope of the Fulton County grand jury investigation into Trump's attempt to overturn the 2020 election came into clearer focus as court filings Tuesday, that's today, right, Dom, indicate that at least a dozen phony Georgia Republican electors have been informed they could face criminal charges. That originally sourced from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. The filing was the latest signal that Fulton County DA Fannie Willis investigation into the, group of 16 GOP electors in Georgia who gathered at the state capitol in December of 2020 as part of a sham ceremony. Was it a sham? A sham ceremony to further Trump's push to reverse his defeat to Joe Biden. The records for the first time showed that 10 additional GOP electors have received letters from Fulton County prosecutors notifying them they could be prosecuted. Well, hell, it's right in the name of the job, right? Prosecutors gonna prosecute, Dom.
Curdy, the investigation into the fake electors scheme appears to be primarily occurring in Fulton County. Even fake elector slates, fake elector slates were also submitted by GOP leaders in Nevada, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, and AG Josh Call, are you listening, in the great state of Wisconsin, which all have attorney generals who are members of the Democratic Party. I mean, why is Fannie Willis the only one in Fulton County in Georgia going after this? Now, granted, I get it. It was Trump's 11,780 votes that he needed, one more than he needed. So that's your intro. But if what they did in Georgia with this fake elector scheme is somehow, some way illegal and not proper and perhaps subject to prosecution, well, why not also in these other states like Wisconsin?
Like Wisconsin, specifically, where we're originating from today. You can join us on the show at 844-967-2789. Dominic, you were not at the Democratic Party convention this year. You know, sort of a big party, brouhaha you missed in our old stomping grounds, La Crosse, just in June. And the last time, the Attorney General of the state of Wisconsin, Josh Call, he's always been friendly to us, he appeared on the show, willingly did, you know, a little interview at the table side with Crudy. And I did ask Josh, hey, Josh, what about a state-level criminal investigation of the fraudulent Trump electors? And Josh deferred to the Department of Justice and effectively said, we know there is a federal Department of Justice investigation. We know what's going on. And I, you know, said, well, couldn't there be both?
Can there be both? Why not?
I think there can be both.
Yes, we look at the example
of Michigan and Dana Nessel. We look at the example of the parallel investigations. You don't think the DOJ is doing some investigating into what happened in Fulton County?
Right.
I mean, hell, they've got the tapes. The January 6th committee
Everyone is doing the very same investigation, right? Yes.
So it's not like there cannot be parallel investigations. And it's not like the attorney general is going to see Crudy and say, oh, man, let me spill my guts. As a lawyer, that's probably nothing he was going to tell me on live radio at Saturday night in the La Crosse Center. But ultimately, as I'm looking Josh in the eye, my takeaway was Josh was deferring to the federal government and assured us that the Department of Justice had already shown their cards on this investigation and we know what's going on. So who am I to get in their way? That was my takeaway.
Well,
I'm not saying it's a sufficient answer.
No, I get it. I was satisfied with my care. I get it. And I could appreciate it. I'm glad at least he sat down and gave you an answer. It's an unacceptable answer. And I get it. I understand you're not going to, you know, show us the subpoenas if there's some sort of grand jury, some investigation going on. You don't talk about ongoing investigations. I got it.
But if you're
relying on the DOJ right now, while I remain hopeful and positive, You know, we haven't seen a whole lot come from that, at least in this regard, yet. And I would also mention that I know, Crudy, hell, if Trump runs again, what if Trump gets elected? You know what he's going to do? He's going to pardon every one of his scheme. If there's state charges that they're convicted of, they cannot be pardoned from those.
Well, I like how you think, because Donald Trump is probably, although plausibly, could be the last Republican ever elected to the presidency. You know, why not Ron DeSantis issuing all the pardons?
Yeah, right.
Doesn't even have to be Trump. You know, just blanket pardon for all my Patriot friends. Let's go party at the Capitol. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. More of you on the phones. The Happier Happy Hour rolls on. 844-96-PARTY. Dial right now.
That was a hoax, right?
Fake.
Think you know politics? Think again. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
I think that I am familiar with the fact that you are going to ignore this particular problem until it swims up and bites you on the ass.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a topical Tuesday. Your call is always welcome here, 844-967-2789. And Dom, the windup is because Tony Evers' reelective campaign in the great state of Wisconsin is being funded by coastal elites like Steven Spielberg. Spielberg funding the reelective campaign of Tony Evers. People All died, right.
Yeah,
so Jaws
he's got
could
good
be
taste.
Made.
He's made some good movies, man. I trust Spielberg's judgment in this regard. I mean, come on. How many classic movies has he been involved with?
You know, Spielberg did E.T., Close Encounters, Jaws. You know,
Raiders of the Lost Ark?
You know how George
Lucas... Show a little backbone, will you?
Yeah, man.
You know how George Lucas followed up Star Wars? You know what the very next movie he made? Brian might, but do you know, Fancy? Howard the Duck.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, except
which included
that one.
Some sort of weird bestiality and... You know, that was just a strange movie on many levels.
But it had Leah Thompson and Jeffrey Jones in it.
Oh, well, that redeems it. big flop right after the big success, right? Well, anyways, good news is E.T. is funding Tony Evers' reelective campaign. I mean, Spielberg's still spending E.T. dollars, I bet. I got to think he's still got
it. Yeah, he's still making E.T. dollars, man. I think that's a bottomless pit for the man.
According to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, filmmaker Steven Spielberg, the most commercially successful director of all time, donated $20,000 to Democratic Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers' reelection campaign. Apparently, new tallies released today. Spielberg and his wife, actress Kate Capshaw, were among 31 people who gave Evers the maximum, $20,000. Used to be $10,000, but then Scott Walker got caught coordinating with outside groups and, you know, breaking all kinds of campaign finance laws. So they doubled the limits up to $20,000.
That you can specifically give to a gubernatorial candidate here in the state of Wisconsin.
A state-level candidate like Tony Evers.
Yeah, but, you know, it's such a misnomer because, of course, you can give unlimited amounts of money to dark money groups and no one ever tracks
dark
it. No
money?
One will ever know.
You mean like the Democratic Party of the state of Wisconsin or the Republican Party of the state of Wisconsin? They are the new conduits. You don't need a dark money. That is legalized bribery. They can just pour as much money into the Democratic Party. And I'm only bringing up the Dems because Ben Wickler and the Dems are much better at captivating Hollywood and elitist money, apparently. But it's pouring in by the millions. And this could be $100 million elective cycle between now and November, between the Tony Evers race against these gubernatorial yahoos on the Republican side. And, of course, the U.S. Senate race. As soon as there's a nominee, the campaign ads.
I mean, we're already getting close. I mean, Ron Johnson's got, what, $9 million? We heard some of the senatorial candidates on the Democratic side funding their own campaigns to the tune of $6, $7 million. I mean, you start adding that stuff
drops
up.
Drops in the bucket, dude. It right, hasn't man. Even started. Hasn't even started. You're going to be... you could say we're going to have a plethora of political spending in the state of Wisconsin. Dark money, candidate spending. I mean, this is the of course, Wisconsin's always a razor-thin margin. It's a swing state. And, of course, the Ron Johnson seat is effectively perhaps the advantage in the U.S. Senate for one party or the other. And here in the state of Wisconsin, the veto pen of Tony Evers is paramount. You can't move governance, but you can block the worst intentions of Republicans by keeping Tony Evers in place. And, of course, it'd be nice if Attorney General Josh Call would do a little more on the fake elector scheme. But you need Josh sticking around as well. You need these guys in these offices.
Yeah.
Because behind them is Robin Voss, gerrymandered supermajorities in the legislature. And the worst that gerrymandering can hand to the state of Wisconsin, it will come from the legislative end. The Tim Ranthams, the Janelle Branchens, they'll be driving the bus in the state of Wisconsin.
Oh,
if
my
it's
God.
Either Rebecca Clayfish Terrible. Or Michaels, or hell, could you imagine a Ram Jam administration?
No, actually, I cannot fathom of such a thing if we've fallen to such depths.
So anyways, Evers raised oodles, but a lot of that money was actually conduited back from the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, where the big donors can give uncapped amounts.
Yeah, well, the knock on that, if you give directly to the major, the Republican
not
or the tax Democratic
deductible.
Party, not tax deductible, man. I mean, if I give it to a 501c3, I get not only can I steer it and have it, used how I want it to, I get a write-off. I get the American people to subsidize that for me. You're very welcome. So, come on, let's be real. There's a whole lot of that money still flowing because they want the tax write-offs.
You know what we forgot? Spielberg. Jurassic Park, baby. Oh, that's a big one. 844.
And Goonies. Oh, one of the classics. One of my favorites.
844-967-2789. Our pal Tom from Madison. Welcome back.
Hey, Tom.
How you doing, Tom?
Hey, it's great to be. Yeah, it's great to be back. I was going to call, different news networks and things, but I thought I would go straight to the people that know the most. What's your take on the deleted tweets from the Secret Service?
I think it should be criminal if they were intentionally deleted. And where there's a lot of smoke here, Tom, and it seems like there's probably fire. And the other question becomes, why weren't the Secret Service agents using their over-the-air walkie-talkies? Why would they resort to using text messages and then deleting the text messages? Because that shows an intent to me to obscure what it is you're communicating about, let's say.
You think? Tom, man, this is the worst attack on the American Capitol in hundreds of years. I mean, we have all this technology. There wasn't a backup. You can't find something. This was purposeful. And those who involved, those that were engaged any way, shape, or form, should all have their asses drugged before a committee, before a prosecutor, before a judge to determine exactly what went down. There is no way. No way. I mean, come on, man. If I was in charge of the Secret Service and my Capitol just got ransacked, you think I'm going to allow my folks to delete their things? Oh, they're supposed to upload it to this, website or government servers before they turn them in. But apparently some of them didn't do it, Tom. Well, then you're fired because this is pretty damn important.
Yeah, we're looking at a little more conspiracy. Now, we're feeling like conspiracy people, but, I think our take on it is actually true. It's kind of like, well, you might not, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean people aren't coming out after you, And I think just because you spend a lot of time putting down the conspiracy theories of others doesn't mean that there isn't a conspiracy right now. This thing is insane.
It is insane.
Well, Tom, appreciate your call, man, but you talk about conspiracy theories. What you're talking about is specifically evidence of acts of the Secret Service that are not properly explained to the American people and may have criminal intent, the intent to obscure. And at minimum, this seems beyond incompetence on someone's behalf because, of course, this evidence was already requested.
When obstruction, whether or not we can, obstruction is a lesser case than treason. You know what I'm saying? So it's real easy to make that call if you're dialed in to that degree.
But to you know, to wonder what may have been contained in the text messages and whether the Secret Service had some malicious intent, let's say, to take Mike Pence way, way off the reservation, if you know what I'm saying, because he didn't want to get in that car that day. The most chilling thing, according to J6 committee member Raskin, was that Mike Pence wouldn't get in the car with the U.S. Secret Service.
And why do you think that is?
Right? I mean, does that feed?
And certainly, those every one of those people need to be brought in and submit to testimony under oath. I mean, and the same. I mean, with the vice president as well. I mean, let's just get to it, people. This was a vast conspiracy, a vast effort by a sitting president who lost an election, who used all the resources he could possibly muster, everything he could do, he tried to do, and at the end. At the end, when it was all said and done, he sent out a tweet the last minute threatening Mike Pence. Oh, he didn't have the courage. And what did they do? They came in, hanged Mike Pence for 187 minutes. Trump did a 187 on this country for 187 minutes. They did not do a damn thing. And the Business Insider reporting today, finally, somebody honing in on my issue with the Pentagon. Christopher Miller installed with, Kash Patel after Trump lost the election. Why would they do that? Well, perhaps because Trump wanted to resist the peaceful transfer of power. And you can only do that when you put your people in place. Come on, man. The Business Insider goes into this. Maybe we'll get there. But it is getting worse, not better. And I've been very concerned, and let's not forget, Charles Flynn, Mike Flynn's brother, was on the phone call, was in the room. The Army lied about it three times before they finally came up and said, oh, yeah, he was on the call. There is a lot going on here, and it's just the tip of the iceberg. Is that conspiratorial? I'm just looking at what I am reading, and it is very, very concerning.
Well, here's the great news, Dom. Don't have to wait that long. Come Thursday night, prime time. Prime time. January 6th hearing. Perhaps the last one for the public for now. Now, earlier today, I saw they might continue hearings right into December.
Yeah, yeah.
But this one specifically, as I've seen early reporting, Dom, what was the president doing minute by minute for 187 minutes while he didn't take any tangible actions to discourage the violence going on? So this one is about Trump. And if I were rolling it out, you know, if they hired me as the Hollywood producer, Dom, I'd go exactly 187 minutes. You know, not just to be ironic, but to kind of put an exclamation point, all capitals, you know, like Trump would do it.
844-967-2789. All right, let me just throw this out there, then we can get back to the calls. Again, from the Business Insider, we posted this one today on the Facebook page. Read it. Check it out. If you're not just beside yourself, you're not reading it right. A bunch of emails came out, and from the Business Insider, just from the body of the piece. Emails show the military's situation planners were closely following the pro-Trump mob's move that day. 2 days prior, Trump's acting defense secretary imposed further restrictions on the deployment of the D.C. National Guard. Well, no, we've talked about that memo, right? The closest force to back up the Capitol Police, ordering they could not be equipped or interact with protesters without his approval. We've shared that memo. We've tweeted it out. It's on the Facebook. Look up the memo. Christopher Miller, he was the acting Secretary of Defense. I mean, Trump put him in after he lost the election. For what possible reason would he do that? Well, now we know. Insider goes on to report, the then Capitol Police Chief requested Defense Department forces at 1:49 p.m. after rioters breached the perimeter, but the acting Defense Secretary, that's again Christopher Miller, he didn't approve the request until 3 p.m., delaying their response time. The first National Guardsmen at the Capitol arrived around 5:40 p.m. So what does this mean? What is this telling me? This telling me the Secret Service was in on it? This telling me that the Pentagon, at least the civilian appointees under Trump, were in on it? And I'll be damned if Charles Flynn, who's Mike Flynn's brother, they lied about his presence in the room and on the phone call more than once. Those do not trend positive for me. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. These are the facts that we know them as of right now. The timelines, the people, the places, what they text, what the emails, and what they did or did not do. These are some known facts, and we're going to find out more and more. But how outrageous, how terrible is it for this country to know that perhaps people in the Pentagon and the Secret Service have been compromised to such a degree that they would join Trump on an attempt to overthrow the government?
You know who hates sharks? Trump. Come back. More devils. The happier happy hour rolls to the end.
We're not just doing this for money. We're doing it for a load of money.
Lifeless eyes. Black eyes. Like a doll's eye.
Hey, lady. You call him Dr. Jones.
Shame, shame.
Know your name.
Why not concur?
See, here I'm now by myself talking to myself. That's chaos there.
Have you seen Schindler's List?
Listening to the radio show your mother warned you about, The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. Time flies when you're having fun. Join us at 844-967-2789.
Dominic, we've got some breaking news out of the House of Representatives. They have passed a bill protecting marriage equality. Now, that doesn't mean it's law yet, folks. Got to get through the Senate and the filibuster, right? But 47 GOP members voted with the Democrats.
Ooh, wow.
47, that's a pretty substantial number. Reporting from the Hill, I'll keep it brief. The House passed a bill on Tuesday to protect marriage equality, a direct response to an opinion from Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas last month that called for reversing multiple decisions that enshrined LGBTQ rights. The legislation, titled the Respect for Marriage Act, passed in a 267 to 157 vote with 47 Republicans joining. All Democrats in supporting the measure, 7 Republicans did not vote, very courageous of them. The measure, which faces a shaky future in the 50-50 Senate, calls for the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, a bill former President Clinton signed into law in 96, that recognized marriage as only a legal union between one man and one woman as husband and wife. And as pointed out here in the state of Wisconsin, Dom, that is a constitutional amendment that passed in 2006. So if there was the rollback by this very ambitious conservative Supreme Court, a revisiting, because, you know, it's same-sex marriage, that's not an enumerated right, right, Alito? Not enumerated. So even though you can claim
either is marriage,
go there.
You know what I mean? You see marriage between a man and a woman anywhere in the Constitution? I do not.
Probably in the 12th century Old English common law that he likes to go to what, justify his abortion ruling? So anyways, 47 Republican House members, I think that's an encouraging step. I was a little surprised at the number. Now, when we go to sort it out, I don't know, but I guarantee Glenn Grothman was not amongst them. Wisconsin,
I believe
6
you on that one, Curdy.
844-967. I haven't seen the math.
No, nor I, but I take that.
But I guarantee the accuracy of the fraction. Dick from Madison, welcome. How you doing, Dick?
Hey, Dick.
Well, you know, you talking about Flynn earlier. I mean, here's a guy that was on Inauguration Day dealing with the Russians on a side deal. But I've got something I'm going to run by you here about Josh Collins and not doing anything about Johnson. I think it has something to do with, you know, the Republicans in the state will go, oh, this is so political, just like at the federal level. You know what I'm saying?
So what? They're going to say that anyway, Dick. You know what I mean? It's like saying, oh, you can't vote for Bernie Sanders. Everyone's a socialist. Everything's going to be political, Dick.
I understand that, but we're in a governor's race that is going to be razor thin. We all know it. And you don't give him any, I don't know, I would like him to do something, but I can understand in another way why he's not, because
then he's playing politics, Dick.
They're playing politics with the law, man.
If your equation is right, what you're suggesting is that the Democratic Attorney General, who's up for re-election, he's on the ticket with Tony Evers. You're suggesting this is lack of political courage or a political decision made. And I would suggest, Dick, if that's the case, then we would be better off moving on to a different attorney general.
Right, because and I'll let you go, Dick. I'll let you speak, but it's certainly just as a political move to prosecute someone for their because of a political reason, and also to not prosecute because of a political reason. Either there have been law breaking in this regard with these fraudulent electors, or there have not been. That's really what it comes down to. And if you're going to say, "Well, we're not going to do that because I'm on the ticket and it may look bad for me," then what, you're going to call a special prosecutor? You're not going to go after lawbreakers because it might look bad for you when you're running for the attorney general? That is just as bad as prosecuting someone for a political reason, Dick. Sorry, man. I wanted to have you speak to that, but thanks for the call, man.
Joe Walsh, and I sat on a Fox News panel, first one I ever went on. Joe Walsh, at that time, former Republican congressman, was an apologist for Donald Trump, specifically on tax policy.
That when it comes to tax reform, he better cut taxes for everybody, and I think that's what he'll do.
And I said, no, he won't. I made Joe Walsh stutter and sputter on Fox News, because I said, he's not giving the middle class a real tax cut, saving that for his rich buddies. Just ask Ron Johnson, right? So anyways, Joe Walsh is effectively predicting if Donald Trump is indicted. And if you agree with me and you've been paying attention, even swing voters in Wisconsin, during this sort of focus group stuff that we saw reported by Axios, they think that Donald Trump should be indicted, should be held accountable. I think the vast majority of reasonable human beings think that a person trying to attempt a coup against democracy should be prosecuted. But Joe Walsh is effectively saying, you know, be careful, because the Proud Boys, the Trumpists out there, they're ready to be activated. They're ready to become violent.
Again? Or still?
I would say renewed violence. New violence. Anyways, I'm just telling you what Joe Walsh had to say. 844-967-2780.
And again, let me, if I may, same kind of philosophy. Certainly there's going to be the crazies out there that will perhaps go down that road. Look what happened on January 6th. But that is not a reason to not hold an insurrectionist bastard accountable for what they did. And if they're all going to step up and step out, then it's time to hold everybody accountable. Because if that's the world we're going to live in, it's going to be a disaster. The rule of law, as all the law and order Republicans will say, must win the day. And if they're going to go to the streets and start doing what they did again at the Capitol, I think this country better be prepared for that.
My buddy Law and Order Wisco Paul, how you doing, Wisco?
Hey, Paulie.
Hey, good afternoon, Devils. Very quickly, I think Josh Carl absolutely positively knows what he's doing. That being said, I think Rojo is going to be hard to beat. I really do, because that base turns out, and so you got to have the Democratic base turn out, and heaven help
you. Cannot tell me that, Paul. You cannot tell me that Ron Johnson is somehow going to win over independent and suburban voters. I mean, you could say that people haven't been paying attention, but Ron is forcing them to pay attention. All these things will be amplified once again once there is a primary winner on the Democratic side. And when you pit any of those sane Democrats against Ron Johnson, I mean, I'm praying, Paul, that the electorate of the great state of Wisconsin has a little common sense, because Rojo's a little past his expiration date, if you know what I'm saying. You know, like yogurt. Well,
I hope you're right, Cootie, because you beat Feingold, who I thought was a great senator, twice, and I don't know how he did that. I really don't. So
I blame Dom. Dom made him a human being by having him on the Devil's Advocates. We will not make that mistake again. Keep listening. You know, but other shows coming next. Thanks.
Come on, Walsh. We don't have all day.
Huck her up, Buttercup.
You were making out during Schindler's List?
I find it sexy.
Get over it.